Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Dr. Ganesh Gopalakrishna, a geriatric psychiatrist at Banner Alzheimer's Institute, and we will be discussing Capgras syndrome. Capgras syndrome is not really well known, but if you've experienced it, you're probably going to remember it. I know a lot of times on Dementia Untangled, I reflect in these conversations about my experiences early in my career when I worked in long-term care, or more specifically at an assisted living. And many of the residents there had some type of dementia. And as we're getting ready to talk about Capgras syndrome today, one particular resident came to mind. It was this beautiful older woman named Nell, who had the most amazing history. A single woman who traveled the world and now was residing in this retirement community that I got to come in and help clean up her room and take care of her. And Nell, for some reason, she always felt that I was doing things to her. For example, she would get beautiful floral arrangements delivered. And she would say that I would take out all the best flowers and replace them with fake or dying flowers. I remember one time in particular, she was adamant that I had taken the insoles out of her shoes and replaced it with used ones, not just the insoles that you buy to slide in your shoes. She literally peeled up the bottom of her shoe to show me the pad that actually goes in the actual shoe.
Oh my goodness.
She said I had taken her mattress and replaced it with a not as nice version. What I realize now is that she had Capgras syndrome, which is a false belief that an identical duplicate has replaced someone significant or is replacing an inanimate object or an animal.
Heather, I can't imagine how you felt when you experienced that with Nell. And, you know, I can't imagine how caregivers and families must feel, especially when their person living with dementia thinks that they are an imposter. It just sounds so complicated, and your story and other stories that I've heard, they actually remind me of listening to case studies at Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that I love research and science, and one thing I find fascinating in research are those case studies. And I'm really looking forward to learning more about Capgras syndrome today.
Welcome, Dr. Ganesh. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get started learning a little more about Capgras syndrome, I want to learn more about you. Can you tell us about your journey and what led you to connect with the dementia community?
Absolutely. So I grew up in India. I went to medical school at Bangalore Medical College in India. I came to the US in 2007 to pursue my specialization in psychiatry, got accepted at University of Missouri, Columbia. Did my psychiatry residency there for 4 years. And then I joined a faculty there working in an inpatient psychiatric hospital. So I took care of adult patients with acute mental illnesses for about 6 years. Then I decided that I wanted to do geriatric psychiatry or specialize in geriatric psychiatry, or in this case, a subspecialization in geriatric psychiatry. And I got accepted into the program at Vanderbilt University in 2017. It was a great experience. One of the reasons why I wanted to do this is I came to the realization the significant shortage in people who were trained in geriatrics, especially mental health for elderly. So I wanted to learn more about it and contribute the best I could in that realm. Once I was getting ready to graduate, I was looking for jobs, and it was coincidental that I found this job at Banner Alzheimer's Institute. And I interviewed here, and I loved the place. I loved the energy that the place had. So I came in here. I've been here for 4 years now, and I've since my start of the fellowship at Vanderbilt, I've come to love the work that I do and people I serve. And I think dementia is a totally different disease to manage over time. And I've come to appreciate all the struggles that people go through and the hardships that it places everyone. And I'm just pleased to be part of the team taking care of them. Personally, my experience with dementia stems from my paternal grandmother. She was, I feel bad about picking my favorite grandmother, but she was my favorite grandmother. And she lived up to 107.
Wow.
Yeah. We were very fortunate to have her around. And she started having dementia close to her, probably her 100th birthday. And it was very apparent as to how she was struggling to kind of keep track. She had 10 kids. I don't know how many grandkids. Nobody went on to count all the grandkids and great grandkids. But she couldn't keep track as initially. And then it went on to become more and more severe. But she still recognized me even till the last time I visited her. And it was a very kind of like gratifying thing that she was able to recognize me, but very also distressing to see how much she had declined. So that's my journey so far.
And it's been such a pleasure to work with you over these past 4 years. Thank you for sharing that story with us. I wonder if we could just level set for our listeners. And can you just tell us, what is Capgras syndrome?
Capgras syndrome, or also known as Capgras delusions, is an irrational belief that someone very familiar to them, like a family member or a friend, or like you said, Heather, an inanimate object is replaced by a duplicate. At its core, when we say delusion, a delusion is a fixed false belief, which means that you cannot convince that person to reason out of these beliefs. They believe in this very strongly, and it's hard to shake it off. So the Capgras delusion just means that they believe in this notion that someone or something is replaced by an imposter, and you cannot change that belief even with the reasoning or showing evidence against it. So those things just stay fixed.
Dr. Ganesh, tell us, why is this happening? What is happening in the brain that causes this?
Yeah, we have tried to understand this over time, and we've had difficulty defining this issue in the beginning, but I think we're getting better at recognizing that due to better awareness. So the research itself doesn't have very clear answers as to why this is happening. But some of the understandings that we have is that it is likely to be a disconnect between the part of the brain that recognizes faces, the part of the brain that assigns the emotional value to these face, to the face. So the two parts of the brain that are involved here, as much as we understand, is called the occipital lobe, which is the posterior or the backside of the brain, and the temporal lobe, which is the side part of the brain. Occipital lobe is very much involved in vision. So it helps us see things. It works really closely with the eyes and helps us see objects and the world around us. The temporal lobe is does a lot of different things, but one of the key things that it does is emotion regulation and how we perceive things. So the connection between these two parts may get disrupted for a lot of different reasons. It could be a brain injury. It could be a disease like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. It could have any other disruption that could happen in those circuits. And it causes people to have these type of symptoms. And it can also happen in patients with dementia where these tracts tend to degenerate and the brain cells die out. They're now no longer able to serve this connection between these parts of the brain.
And you mentioned this happens with other diseases, schizophrenia, bipolar, brain injury. How common is Capgras syndrome for people living with dementia?
Yeah, so there's some studies we've done. Again, this the reporting is the main issue here as to how well this is reported. But overall, the estimates are between about 5 to 20% of patients with dementia may experience Capgras delusions. Now, some types of dementia tend to have more of this compared to the others. For example, Lewy body dementia tends to have more Capgras delusions than Alzheimer's disease. One thing we need to always remember is that with Lewy body disease, people tend to have more visual hallucinations. So they see things which are not real. They can see people, they can see animals, bugs, which are not real. A lot of times they may have the insight as in like to know that this is not real and tell people that I know this is not real. Sometimes they may not have that. So when you have visual hallucinations, there's more chances of having Capgras delusions with it too.
Thank you for sharing so much about the science and the research behind Capgras. And I want to shift our focus now to the family. Can you tell us maybe a story or just share a little bit about how does this syndrome impact families?
Behavioral symptoms are very common in dementia. Close to like 95%, sometimes even 100% of the people with dementia tend to have behavioral symptoms. The most common ones are apathy, where they don't have a drive to do things, or depression. But some number of patients will have psychosis characterized by hallucinations and delusions. So with psychosis, it can become very burdensome for both the person having dementia and the person taking care of them. The way, if you indulge me with an experiment, just imagine you not knowing what is, you're in a room or you're in a house, which you sometimes may not recognize as your home. And you think that the person who is with you is not the person they claim to be, and they're someone else, and you may trust them. You may, it is difficult for you to trust, but also look at your, you don't have means to just get out of that situation. You just cannot leave the house. You cannot just drive away. So if you can imagine that situation for yourself, it's such a scary experience. So it can be very distressing for the person going through these delusions and having cognitive impairment. On the other hand, you look at the caregivers, it's such a distressing situation for them too. They often have to take a lot of time to take care of the person with dementia. And it's all already a big ask or big hurdle for to accept someone with cognitive impairment. They're not the same person that they used to be. And they're making such a big effort, giving all the time and effort to take care of them. And then you add that the person who is in that role, who's having dementia is not able to accept it or thinks that you're someone else. It can be very distressing. Just to illustrate, I'll just share a situation that I had to take care of in the clinic recently. This couple have been married for decades, like 40, 50 years now. Great couple, you know, they're very accomplished and they've been very good support for each other. And from the time that I saw her, who is having dementia, They've always been like very nice to each other, and he would put his hands to just to comfort her on the shoulders and give her just a little bit of a massage, so that you know she's not stressing out about all the questions that we are asking and the tests that we are doing. And eventually she had progressed over the last couple of years, and now she's not able to recognize him. So Capgras delusions falls under a bigger umbrella called delusional misidentification syndromes, which means that, you know, they may not identify them as to who they are. So in this case, she did not identify him as her husband, but as she identifies him as her brother. This was such a distressing situation for him that, you know, he felt like he was not able to be with her as the way he used to be in the past. And now he doesn't even comfort her, have any physical contact with her, because he kind of sensed that it was making her feel uncomfortable. And so now that they are kind of living in the same house, but as two different individuals, and he recognizes that she's not comfortable with him around. So they eventually had to, I mean, they were in the process of moving to a new facility where she can be in a more structured setting and he can be close by. But you can see that it's a very distressing situation for the husband.
I can't imagine how heartbreaking that would be for him.
You know, Dr. Ganesh, when I think of behaviors and dementia, I feel like the vast majority of them happen in the moderate stage, where the world is kind of becoming very confusing to this person. Their sensory perceptions are changing. Is that true for Capgras too? Do you see that mostly in the moderate stage?
Yeah, early moderate to moderate, I mean, through the moderate stage is probably where most of these symptoms are happening. Again, the incidence, you know, estimates all varies from different studies. So it's difficult to pinpoint as to which stage has the biggest incidence. But I would say moderate is probably the stage where you see the most.
And kind of a follow-up to that, when I think of work that I've done in different support groups and caregivers who are dealing with delusions and, you know, have tried everything and can't find a workaround for it, I've heard other caregivers try to comfort them by saying, well, they're going to progress out of it. Is this true for Capgras too? Can they not only progress into it and develop Capgras, but then as the dementia progresses, is that something they leave behind?
It could be. There is, you know, some lot of changes that happen as the disease progresses. You're less mobile. Your ability to take care of yourself also goes down. So there's more dependence on caregivers that comes with it. So there are changes that become inevitable, and where they have to rely on others, even if they're not able to express themselves. So it's hard to say if it completely goes away, these feelings, but there's more of a tolerance that comes with it. So there is some easing in that respect.
I have a question that kind of relates back to your favorite grandmother and how special it was that she still recognized you. But when you have folks who just misidentify family members or don't recognize them anymore or have Capgras, I mean, how do you differentiate between those different things?
Yeah, it can be very tricky and difficult clinically also to differentiate misidentification syndromes and Capgras delusions and lack of identification. So the lack of identification is probably simpler because they just don't recognize, you know, like going back to my grandmother, if I brought my wife along with me and she would say, who is this with you? So she wouldn't just recognize this person. So that's less distressing most of the times compared to misidentification where they think there's someone else. And now misidentification syndromes is a broad category and Capgras falls under it. In misidentification, like you know, in that case where I just described, she recognizes him as her brother instead of the husband. That's a little different than saying that the husband is replaced by someone else and that imposter is living with us. So it needs a lot more questioning and observation from both the caregiver and the clinician to zero in on those nuances. And as to how important it is, the management is not very different with respect to how you help with those things. But there may be some benefits of identifying who this person actually thinks it is, so that it always can be useful. But it would require a lot more questioning. And as the disease progresses, it may become more and more tricky to elicit those type of responses from the patient. It may be more obvious from observations from the caregiver.
This is really interesting that you talk about misidentification syndromes almost being like the umbrella, and there's all these different versions, and Capgras is just one of those, kind of with that imposter perspective. I wonder, probably one of the most important questions that we could ask today is, how can families address this if they identify their person is dealing with Capgras syndrome? Are there medical interventions, or are we looking strictly non-medical?
There are some medical interventions, not the most effective medications. The mainstay of treatment with Capgras delusions or any psychosis after behavioral interventions is use of antipsychotics. And we tend to avoid using this class of medications as long as we can for a few reasons. One is that they may have side effects, which are not very good for older patients, which affects, you know, who are mostly affected by dementia. And these can include sedation, falls, stiffness of their limbs, sometimes even drooling, Parkinsonian symptoms. On the other thing to be aware of is FDA has a black box warning on all these medications for use in dementia, saying that the risk of death goes up with use of these medications. So we are always cautious using this class of medications. But if we are using all the behavioral interventions and we're still not addressing all the concerns and there's still a lot of distress for the patient with dementia and the caregiver, we use antipsychotics. Those medications are, some of them are like Seroquel or quetiapine, risperidone, olanzapine. Some of these medications are commonly used. Their effectiveness is not well studied and established in the effect sizes. Or in other case, how well they do compared to a placebo is not very well established. And that's why we are very cautious of using these medications, just weighing the risks and benefits. With behavioral interventions, we may have a better chance of dealing with at least mild symptoms. So one thing is to, first of all, just familiarize ourselves and empathize with the person with dementia. Just put yourself sometimes in their shoes and say, you know, how are they feeling when all of these things are, which are, first of all, so kind of strange for them as to how things are going around them. And then to add this layer of complexity that you can't even trust that person who is next to you or who's taking care of you. If we are able to empathize to some extent, that might help you know, address this issue much better. The second thing is to never argue or correct. As I mentioned earlier, this is a fixed false belief. It is very unlikely or distressing, actually, to even try to shake their belief off. So correcting them, saying that, no, I am this person, and showing all the pictures and all those things may, at least in that moment, may make it more and more uncomfortable and difficult for them to deal with and aggravate them even further. So avoid arguments at all costs. But what you can do is to validate their feeling, their emotions, saying that, I understand this is very upsetting to you. I know this could be, this is making you upset and I feel it. So just validating their emotions can be very powerful. and saying, I care about you and you're safe with me, those kind of things can be very powerful. Also, some things like along the lines of therapeutic fibbing that you probably mentioned on this podcast, saying things, pretending as if you're going to shoo away the imposter or sending them away, can sometimes work and establish trust with a loved one. One of the things that could be very effective behaviorally is to connecting with the person with dementia auditorily before you establish visual contact. So recall that the problems that we think is an issue here is the disconnect between the visual processing and the emotional processing. So taking that out of the equation or putting that on the back burner can be very helpful, or making that as a secondary sensory stimulus can be very helpful. So for example, the caregiver comes into the house or they're in a different room, talking to them, talking to the person with dementia can be very powerful, saying that, you know, hi, I'm here, I'm your husband, Bob, I'm home. I just want to tell you about what I did outside or what I was doing. So just keep on talking so that they make that connection with auditory information to that relationship and emotion, and then slowly walk into the room so that they're able to make that connection better. So this can be a very good way of introducing yourself and reducing that anxiety about someone else coming in. I think finally, I would also add that adding positive emotional things when you're connected is a good thing. These are not always like a black and white, at least initially, that there may be periods where they do recognize them and they may go back and forth. So when they are having a good emotional moment, that is one where they can capitalize using some positive experiences. So this can be a good time for them to bring out those photo albums and say, look, you remember this, or not remember, but you know, this was the time that we had this trip to New Orleans and we had this great time. We went to this restaurant. Just those reminiscences can be a powerful way to connect with each other.
These are such excellent tips. As we're getting close to wrapping up our time together, I want to see if you can just give us some tips about Heather's situation that we started off with. Tell us, how could Heather have dealt with Nell when maybe she told her that she had replaced her mattress with a mattress that really wasn't as good as her other one? What kind of things could she have done in those situations?
I think there's a lot of different variables that goes into it, but at the face value, some of the things that Heather could have done is again validate her emotions. Say, Nell, I understand this is very frustrating. It is very difficult for you to see this happen. So I'm sorry that you're going through this. That can be a very powerful way to do it. And things that you don't do is not to engage in argument or correct them or say, no, these were the flowers that they sent you. I did not even touch them. So don't give any evidence contrary to what that is. And build on, if there she was involved in her caregiving other times, build on those times. Have some good positive experience when she's not upset, and make her more trusting towards the caregiver.
All great tips. Thanks for helping out young Heather early on in her career. If only I knew then what I know now. So before we close today, can you give us your final thought when it comes to Capgras syndrome?
So just remember that behavioral symptoms are very common, and psychosis could also happen with dementia. It is unfortunate that people go through this, but you're not alone. And there are very good strategies to help deal with this, including Capgras delusions. And just some of the basics that we cover through this podcast and other resources are very good strategies for Capgras delusions too, like avoiding arguments, validating their emotions, and using the sensory modalities, which are functional and are strengths for the patient.
Today, our conversation has been with Dr. Ganesh Gopalakrishna, a geriatric psychiatrist and associate director of the Stead Family Memory Center at Banner Alzheimer's Institute. We so appreciate you helping us untangle Capgras syndrome.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and I really appreciate all the good work you all are doing here and educating everyone. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate all the fantastic work that you're doing, and thank you for being with us today. And thank you, Heather, for another great conversation. And thank you to you, our listeners. We're so glad you joined us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.